The Right Question is funded by the Steele Reese Foundation, by Humanities Montana, and by listeners like you.
I'll never forget the day I read a book. It was contagious, 70 pages. There were pictures here and there, so it wasn't hard to bear the day I read a book.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Right Question, a program that features writers from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman. This week is our semi-annual Book Talk program, so I'm in the studio with Barbara Thoreau, who's the manager of Fact and Fiction, and Zed, who's one of my colleagues here at Montana Public Radio. And we're here to answer the most important question of the season.
What shall I read?
But if you walk into my house, you'll see loads of books. And believe me, they're not there just for appearance. I press an awful lot of butterflies.
Let's start with fiction. Fiction for adults. What's on your list, Barbara?
Well, I have several things that have come out in the past couple of months. Jamie Ford's new novel, Songs of Willow Frost, which again takes us back to Seattle. And this is during the Depression. It's set in 1934 with the Chinese-American community. And it's a young boy who is in an orphanage, and he knows he has seen his mother on the poster of a movie promotion. So he goes to the movies to try and figure out what has happened to her. Jamie Ford's previous novel that was such a big hit was Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet.
And I see there you have the new one by Larry Watson.
Larry Watson's Let Him Go. Larry Watson also is another popular person. He had a book called Montana 1948. This one begins in North Dakota and comes into Montana, and the year is 1951. And it's a man and his wife, George and Margaret Blackledge, lost their son. He died when he was thrown from a horse, and his wife took their only grandchild with her back to her family, or back to Montana. So George and Margaret set out to go find him, and the want is to bring him back. And what they encounter when they are on the reservation in Montana are different sets of values and people. And again, Larry Watson has his characters facing some real dilemmas.
That book was featured in the September issue of O magazine, Oprah magazine, as one of the 10 titles to pick up now. There were lots of reviewers that had really distinctive things to say about it. One called it a chilling tale, and another one called it utterly mesmerizing. And another one said it's the best novel I've read this year. So pretty high praise.
Pretty high praise, but it is a chilling tale. It's not one that you're going to sit down and maybe feel good about. You'll be thinking about it for a while. But that's also a sign of a very well done work of writing. Maybe one that entertains more and gives people a cause to celebrate. Anne Hillerman has taken up where her father left off and has a book called Spider Woman's Daughter, in which Leaphorn and Chi come back. Anybody that was a Tony Hillerman fan, you might be apprehensive and think, oh no, nobody can do what Tony did. Well, his daughter's got the formula. And it's delightful. You go back into the Arizona that we all came to know and love because of Tony Hillerman, and the characters pick up right where he had left off. So we're hoping this means Anne's got that formula down and will return again. It's called Spider Woman's Daughter.
Zed, what do you got on your list?
Oh, I have one of those thinking books. It's called Billy Moon. It's written by Douglas Lane, who lives in Portland, Oregon. Billy Moon is Christopher Robin, the son of A.A. Milne. And Billy Moon is a bit surreal and circuitous, as befits Doug Lane, who hosts a weekly podcast, a weekly philosophy podcast called Diet Soap. The characters are always shifting. They're a bit hard to pin down. They're moving between dream and reality, never quite sure whether they themselves are characters in a story, which of course they are. It focuses on the big themes of freedom, particularly on escaping who you are. And much of it occurs during the 1968 student riots in Paris, where that big theme of freedom was on everyone's mind. Billy Moon by Douglas Lane.
The Shadow of Owls is a literary thriller about science, power, and the lives of ordinary people, especially a woman who's a marine biologist, and her passion for her work puts herself and her family at serious risk. This is a novel by John Keeble, who's a professor emeritus of creative writing at Eastern Washington University. It's nearly 400 pages long, so it's a novel that you can spend some time with. A literary thriller. And by Ron Carlson, Return to Oak Pine, and it's set in Wyoming. The year is 1999, and it's about the lives of four men who are trying to make peace with who they are in the world. The protagonist's name is Jimmy Brand. He's left Wyoming and moved to New York, where he became very successful as a writer. But he's dying, and this story tells about him and his three high school friends who were all in a band together. And now they're all back in Oak Pine, Wyoming. And as middle-aged men, they're getting the band back together. And it might be the most important thing they do. What else is on your fiction list, Barbara?
I have a couple more to talk about. One is Sweet Thunder, Ivan Doig. Maury Morgan is back, and he's back in Butte. So, you know, you've got kind of a triple header going on there. Thunder is the name of a newspaper. So guess what's going on in this one? And Maury is an editorial writer for Thunder, so he's taking on the Anaconda Company. This picks up where Work Song left off. Maury was in Butte, and he worked in the library, and the labor organizers were meeting in the basement of the library. So we're going back again to a lot of the same characters and the things that were going on. So Sweet Thunder by Ivan Doig, returning us to Butte in 1920. And then a short novella called Spirit of Steamboat, which is a Walt Longmire story. It's not necessarily a mystery, but Craig Johnson has brought Walt Longmire into a holiday story. So this would be one of those you could put in a stocking, perhaps, and then sit by the fire and read. It doesn't take that long to read it, but what you're finding out is something that had happened on a previous Christmas Eve to Walt, and how he took it upon himself to rescue somebody by taking them from Wyoming to Denver in an old airplane. And a woman appears to return a flight jacket. So that's what brings on the reminiscence of what was going on a fateful Christmas Eve.
From the University of Nevada Press, a novel called Sunland by Portland, Oregon author Don Waters. It's the story of a man in his mid-30s who needs to make money to take care of his grandmother in Tucson, Arizona. So he starts smuggling medications across the border. It's kind of a picaresque novel in which his misadventures involve residents of the retirement center where his grandmother is living, Mexican gang threats, a voluptuous former babysitter, midnight voicemails from an exasperated ex-girlfriend, and a giraffe. Fun little novel. There's one coming out in just a couple of weeks called For Today, I Am a Boy. It's a novel by Seattle author Kim Fu. And this is her debut novel. She's 26 years old. And it's about four second-generation Chinese sisters, one of whom happens to be a boy. The novel takes place in several settings in Montreal, California, and Berlin, and it's a coming-of-age tale about the costs of forsaking your own path and deferring to what others want for you. Well, let's talk about some children's fiction, something that the little kids might want to read or some teens might want to read. What have you got, Barbara?
Well, Sneed B. Collard III has given us another young adult chapter book called Dog 4491. And this involves time travel. not only with people, but the dog is also some of this mysterious types of events that go on. The dog's name is Sophie and travels from 1926 to the present and brings back information about what had happened within a house. And the two boys that lived in this house at those differing times do meet and have a lot of things in common. So dog 4491.
There's also a gang in there that's in the past and the present.
Yep.
For very young readers or the people who read to them, a picture book titled Cheer Up Mouse. It's by illustrator Jed Henry, who lives in Provo, Utah. This isn't a really recent book, but we missed it last year, and I can imagine adults or the older siblings of toddlers all snuggled up and laughing at the images and the way all the animals are trying to make the sad little mouse smile. So I wanted to mention it. And from California author Bethany Dini Merguia, Snippet, the Early Riser. It's the story of a typical snail who loves drawing, playing soccer, and piggyback rides, but he does not love to sleep in. So parents of kids who like to get up early and wake everybody up will relate to this book, and the kids will really like looking at the pictures. Also, another California author, Eve Bunting, with illustrator Sergio Ruzier, who's a member of the Maurice Sendak Fellowship. They've just published Have You Seen My New Blue Socks? It's a really fun and cute book. You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Barbara Thoreau and Zed about recently published books. You'll find information about all of these books at mtpr.org/twq. Move on to poetry.
And I'd like to talk about one of Missoula's own. Josh Slotnick has a volume of poetry out called Home Farm. And as David James Duncan said, Josh Slotnick is a Wendell Berry-style mad farmer. He's manager of the Garden City Harvest Peas Farm, helping our community connect to our food. And I like to think of him on the front lines of a post-corporate agricultural renaissance. These poems are stories of family, if nothing else, intertwined with the seasonal demands of the farm. He's wanting what's best for his family, for his farm, and for the community. And it's a geography of memory you get glimpses of, and he's writing to his daughters.
I really learned a lot about where my food comes from through these poems, especially the Thanksgiving turkeys.
No, it's a beautifully done book, and it's a beautiful book with an illustration on the front cover by Claire Emery. And it's just a wonderful salute, again, as Josh does, to Montana, to Missoula, to family and farm.
It's a portrait of place. Many of us have been to the Peas Farm. Many of us have enjoyed getting our fingers in the soil, enjoying the fruits of our labor, eating the food that we help grow. And his farm really is a part of the community in that way. And he's captured those struggles as he's grown the farm and as he has grown the connections with the community.
David James Duncan also said, his poems are intimate, sassy, effortlessly knowledgeable, bluesy in their brokenness, and as defiant as a farmer must be to face the euphemism we call a Rocky Mountain growing season. I have several books on my list from Lost Horse Press. Christine Holbert and Lost Horse Press really do a great job of featuring original poets. and Christine always creates great cover art. The first one is Dragonfly Weather. This is a collection of poems by Lois Red Elk, who's an enrolled member of the Fort Peck Sioux in Montana. And the collection starts out with a prose poem titled Ancient Storyteller, in which the narrator is describing how the Dakota Lakota people honored the special powers of the four-winged storyteller, Dragonfly, and how they decorated their shields and horses and moccasins with images of dragonflies. And throughout the collection, she's bringing in the language and the culture of her people from past decades and even the past century. Also from Lost Horse Press, a collection titled To Love That Well, New and Selected Poems, 1954 to 2013, by Robert Pack. And I think this is an important collection from a man whose credits include Abernathy Professor of Literature and Creative Writing Emeritus at Middlebury College, Director of the Breadloaf Writers Conference, and Professor in the Honors College at the University of Montana. Also from Lost Horse, a collection titled There, Period, Here, Period, by Stan Sanvel Rubin. He's a Western Washington writer. This is a slender volume of short poems with titles like Silence is Round Like a Moon, Radishes in Wartime, and The Duplicity of Snails. And Wolf Teeth by Henry Realbird. He's a former Montana poet laureate, a teacher, a horse trainer, a rancher from Crow Indian country. And again, this is a collection of poems and stories by someone who remembers his native language and traditions and has written them out for the rest of us to see and think about. And the last book from Lost Horse Press that I want to mention is titled Incomplete Strangers. It's by Robert McNamara, who is a poet and university director of the Puget Sound Writing Project. It's a collection of poetry that I think will delight scholars and tickle the curiosity of everyone else. He mentions Odysseus, Dionysus, Plato, Socrates, and Donatello in his poems, but he also writes about his granddaughter, spiders, and how the wife will operate the TV Blu-ray remote after the husband dies. Well, let's move on to nonfiction. I just want to remind everybody that you can find this list of books at the Right Questions blog, mtpr.org/twq. You got some nonfiction there, Barbara?
I do. Two that have become favorites of mine. One is called Empty Mansions, The Mysterious Life of Huguenot Clark and the Spending of a Great American Fortune. This is by Bill Deadman and Paul Clark Newell, Jr. I became obsessed with this book when I was reading it. Huguenot died at the age of 104, and yes, she was William Clark's daughter. And when she was born, William Clark was 68 years old. And when she died, she had three homes that she was not living in because she put herself in a hospital and lived there for the last decades of her life. Another one that I think is an important history for our part of the world is The Heart of Everything That Is, The Untold Story of Red Cloud, an American Legend, by Bob Drury and Tom Calvin. The Heart of Everything That is the Sioux translation of what the Black Hills is for the Sioux. And Red Cloud was the first person that truly did defeat the Army, the U.S. military, and made them negotiate to his terms. But he said the only promise that the U.S. government ever made that they kept was that they said they would take his land, and they did. So you learn a little bit about him. You learn about the Army. Sherman came out after his somewhat victorious reign and ruin in the Civil War, and he was assigned this territory. And as he was trying to find out about the territory and tour it, he was very upset when people were calling it Red Cloud's territory, saying, "What do you mean? I just fought in the Great Civil War for our Union. This is not his territory." And that kind of set the stage, but I think it's very readable, and you learn a lot about Civil War generals, about the Indians. I grew up in what I call the heart of the Civil War country in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and I learned a different type of Civil War history than what I learn about these generals and people when they came to the West.
Very well researched.
Yes.
I have three more personal volumes. Dandelion Hunter, Foraging the Urban Wilderness. This is by Rebecca Lerner, who writes a popular blog on foraging food from your surrounds, whether it be for survival, maybe because of the zombie apocalypse, or for medicine purposes, or just sustainable living. Rebecca sets off to live off of wild plants, literally growing between the cracks in the streets, in the side lots, and in the parks of Portland. There's a little bit of a touch of wild and crazy in this book, but it's also very fun and very enjoyable. It's almost as though the plants themselves are characters of the book, as are the various guides and foraging partners that you get to meet and that you would perhaps expect live in Portland, Oregon. Dandelion Hunter, Foraging the Urban Wilderness. I also have Gail Story's volume, I Promise Not to Suffer. A Fool for Love Hikes the Pacific Crest Trail. It's no secret that Wild by Cheryl Strayed was one of my favorite books of 2012. You'll remember the hiking book on the cover. So when Cheryl wrote the blurb for Gail Story's book, I was intrigued. Gail is a 52-year-old hospice doctor. She's quite pampered. She's quite the urbanite. And her husband wants to hike the PCT. And they tackle it in a fashion quite different to Cheryl Strayed. Gail and Porter are obsessively prepared. They have lists for everything, and they make their own ultralight homemade gear. This book won the 2013 National Outdoor Book Award. There's lots of anxiety about herself, about her marriage, and about her ailing mother. Gail aches. She's cold. She runs into, face-to-face, a mountain lion, and from all these things, there's nothing to hide. A Promise Not to Suffer, A Fool for Love Hikes the Pacific Crest Trail by Gail Story. And then Facing the Wave, A Journey in the Wake of the Tsunami by Gretel Ehrlich, who wrote The Solace of Open Spaces about the restful properties of the West, and Ehrlich has recently returned to Wyoming. In this volume, she returns to the Japanese coast near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant, site of so much devastation from the 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Ehrlich expresses, captures a sense of awe and sympathy, awe at the power of rice farmers, of the fisher folk, of the monks and the geishas that she meets, all of whom are survivors in so many ways. It inevitably raises questions of living with tragedy, living in a community where global warming, nuclear power, and the coast all take their toll. It's hard and awful in places. It's sharp and provocative. Facing the Wave, A Journey in the Wake of the Tsunami by Gretel Ehrlich.
Yellowstone Has Teeth is a memoir by Marjane Ambler, who divides her time between Atlantic City, Wyoming, and Lake Havasu, Arizona. Marjane and her husband Terry spent 9 years living year-round in Yellowstone National Park when Terry worked for the Park Service, and this book tells their story as well as the stories of other people who've worked in the park and lived there year-round. Lots of the things that were in this book I had never really thought about before, such as the dramatic increase in the numbers of bison after the Park Service began packing the roads for winter tourists. I mean, it became so much easier for them to stay alive in the winter because they had these little superhighways they could hang out on. And how people got fresh vegetables in the middle of the winter or got their mail. They had to ride a snowmobile 30 miles through avalanche country to do either one of those things or just go see their friends. And there's also a lot of inside information about the fires of 1988 in the book. And also in the memoir category, Bad Luck Way, A Year on the Ragged Edge of the West. It's by Bryce Andrews. He's a Seattle guy who came out to Montana and spent a year working on a ranch. And it's a story about hard work, hard living, and the hard business of raising cattle on some of the most beautiful land in the world. Part of his story is about making peace with his sympathy for a pack of wolves and the hard choice he had to make in order to save the landowner's cattle.
I have two more history books. One called Montana Territory in the Civil War by Ken Robeson, which starts in 1862 and again brings some of the people that were fighting battles in the Civil War out into Montana. And people don't think of Montana having much influence in the Civil War. And I think on some levels people escaped what was going on. And then, as previously mentioned in another book, we had to put up with what some of those Civil War generals did when they came out and transferred some of their feelings. And just a brief mention of a book called That Beautiful Little Post, The Story of Fort Missoula by Gary Glenn. And this is a nice history of Fort Missoula, all the things that had happened to it. And it brings it totally up to date with a lot of the things that are going on and what they're still finding there.
Does it have the bicycle corps in it?
It does.
I love the bicycle corps.
And I want to mention A Taste of Montana, Favorite Recipes from Big Sky Country by Sebring Davis. There's a foreword by our own Greg Patent. And there are some obvious recipes in here, local ingredients, but with a twist: elk sausage scramble, huckleberry martini, barbecue bison short rib ravioli, that one is from the Chico Hot Springs, pheasant empanada, that one from the Grand Hotel in Big Timber, and there are regional foods like Swedish oven pancakes, rustic flathead cherry tart, roasted Montana apples and winter root veggies, that one from Paws Up, and there's a moose drool barbecue sauce recipe in here. And one of my favorites, both at the restaurant and also in the book, is Braised Lamb Shanks from Pearl Cafe here in Missoula. It's a great holiday book. It allows me to tell stories of our food, of this place, and of some of my favorite destinations and the restaurants that I frequent. A Taste of Montana, Favorite Recipes from Big Sky Country.
Well, thanks, Barbara. Thanks, Ed, for talking with me about books.
Thank you. And season's readings.
Happy holidays.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Be sure to check out the Right Questions blog at mtpr.org/twq. That's where you'll find information about all the books we've mentioned during this program. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, with help from Barbara Thoreau and Kim Anderson. Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. Music for this program was written and performed by John Floridis. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.